town and make a garage there and some offices.
It seems like the whole Amsterdam in the 70s and 80s was just destined to be a parking lot.
Yeah, but you cannot imagine that whole block was almost empty. Few people still live there, old people.
But the block was the Bijenkorf was... No, the Bijenkorf was never empty.
No, the Bijenkorf was still there.
Yeah,
just behind.
But you know, the parking garage of the Bijenkorf, that whole block.
Right, yeah.
From the Condomerie next to the W139, and then to the Krasnopolsky.
Yes.
And the other corner is the Vincent Hotel, or St. Christopher. And then next to the St. Prophet is the St. Anastre, that's where I live.
Mm-hmm.
And then so... In the back, there's the small alleys. We have some gardens. So if I go from the back, I can, you know, entrance the W129 or... So the inside of the block is still very silent. You know, it's quiet.
Mm.
So we squatted the W139. And interesting story was we didn't have to squat it because we got the key from the company who was renovating the Bijenkorf at that time. But they had to quit because all the stuff from the Bijenkorf, which was taken out, was stored in the W139. So we started stealing in the weekends, you know, pipes and like tubes and everything, because we could go in the back on the roofs. And the guy who was renovating the back knew it, you know, it was a younger guy, and he didn't care that much, as long as it was too much. And so a certain day he said, we're going to leave, so you want to have the keys?
Wow.
So we bought some cheap apple cake at the HEMA on the new day and said, yeah. And so that's how we got the building. And then we went to the Bijenkorf and on the office in Amstelveen, I think. And we threatened them a little bit in the office. And so...
Threatened them with what?
Well, in the time, what I said was... Mm-hmm. Way more violent, so they were aware that we were with a lot of people close to their shop and their big windows. You only have to mention that, and then they were like, okay. But anyway, they didn't know what to do with the building. So from there we started, but the houses were really not like easy to squat, you know, there was no water, there was no electricity, there was nothing, you know. So. We brought in artists all the time, and they started to renovate on their own all these houses, much which were like older, mostly older than 100 years, because a lot of them are now monuments. And also part of the W139 is a monument. So from there we started, and then to go really quick, we got a contract, everybody got a contract there from the... First, we convinced the town government to buy the whole block, and that Schaefer did that, you know, the famous...
Jan Schaefer.
Yeah.
And Luke Bonen.
Yeah.
Can't live in bullshit.
And I met him a few times, and so he bought it, and then in the contract was also the way it was going to be renovated. That took a longer time, and in the contract was also you could buy the building if you wanted it. So, because they didn't know what to do with the big space, so they thought we could buy it. But that took also, of course, a long history before we...
In the end, you did end up buying the space.
Yeah.
And can I ask for how much? Do you still remember?
Yeah, it was an interesting negotiation. I went with a guy who had some knowledge about how to buy, not a real estate guy, just a... guy like me with more knowledge about numbers. So we went to the town government we sat there and they said, yeah, we want to buy the building. I said, okay, you can buy it. And they said, well, how much is it? And they said, $500,000 guilders. And the guy next to me said, well, no, it's not more worth than a guilder because it's totally ruined. So we said, let's say €300,000. And then the guy said, yeah, okay. So in like half an hour, we were outside, and he told me, that, well, that was a quick earning, €200,000. So we bought it for that, but the renovation was more than like $1 million.
Steep amount. We'll come to how you finance that later. I want to move to the Bouwderk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my name is Walter, and I work as a graphic designer and a filmmaker. I was born in Amsterdam, and I still live here. Currently in Noord, which is not on the map on our table, but it should be here, close to the last subway station. And I graduated at the Sonberg Institute, the Masters of the Rietveld, 2 years ago. And it was, yeah, I think over there I realized that the fact that I'm from Amsterdam was special in this context, which was, yeah, I guess when I came there, I was intimidated in a good way by all the international students there. And it was a bit like, oh, what's my narrative? But then from the whole institute, I was the only one from Amsterdam, which was, yeah, which is interesting in an institute that is located in Amsterdam. And throughout my studies, I... yeah, I was thinking about Amsterdam a lot and mostly about the current housing crisis because I never lived somewhere in Amsterdam apart from the place where I grew up with my parents for more than 2 years.
Where did you grow up?
I was born in the Pijp and I grew up in New Sloten and then in Bad Verdorp, which is not strictly Amsterdam, but like the suburb. And then afterwards, I lived mostly in Noord for 8 years now. Yeah, that was Antikraak. So when I moved out of my parents' house, I lived Antikraak for a while because it seemed, or it was really cheap. It was actually for free for 2 years. But in the area where it's now Glaasje Noord Skate Café, there was like
Hamerkwartier.
Yeah. And then they said like, oh, do you really want to live here? Like, yeah, it's nice here. And then, okay, here's the key. Make sure it doesn't get squalid. I think when I was living there, I started to see the, aggression of gentrification, but also city planning that's, there's this building in Noord called North Orleans, which is already using this like almost colonial narrative of that Noord is empty and yet to be discovered. And it was supposed to be student housing, but there's not a border on the maximum amount of student housing. So now these are like designer lofts that are 1,200 euros a month for 20 square meters. So yeah, obviously not for students. And then I also got kicked out of this Antikraak house because after 2 years you obtain tenant rights. Yeah. And then they don't want that, of course. So then after 2 years I got kicked out. And I think that was the moment that I started to look for other alternatives for living. And squatting was always something I was interested in. The counterculture aspect, like Hotel 301 was the place where I had my like first beers when I was 15, I guess. Because they wouldn't ask for ID over there. And then you had the Mobiele Eenheid, another squad in the Damekwartier as well, which is affected for some years already. But yeah, after this, after I had to move out of this Antikraak, I was also involving it in my work a little bit more and thinking about it, like, okay, how could we reclaim the city center mostly? Because the city center really became this place with a lot of Nutella shops and inaccessible for a lot of... friends of mine, I think. You live there, of course, and I have some friends who sometimes live there, but it's never for long periods. Like, I don't have any friends who have like fixed contracts there. It's always in the periphery. And then there's this Hotel Mokum, or it was called Hotel Marnix, which was it's an empty hotel. It's empty again on the Marnixstraat.
I cycled 2 days before the squatting action. I was looking at it again. Still empty.
Yeah, now there's like a tourism ticket sticker on the window, and they painted the facade.
Well, probably they're gonna buy it because that was the richest guy.
Yeah, it's owned by this
tourism ticket.
No. It's owned by this hotel. But anyways, yeah, we. This place was squatted in October, which was a great action. It was during the ADEF, which is like an which stands for Amsterdam Dans Ergens Voor, and it's like, I guess
it's an alternative event to the Amsterdam dance event.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, a reaction to the commercial clubs. It's a street rave basically, and it's every year it's a parade through the city, and this year it was coincidentally. Through the morning stuff. And when all the ravers like walked through the morning stuff, there was like this banner drop that really really big said Pak Mokum terug, which is also part of our name, Hotel Mokum, and Mokum means Amsterdam, It's a Yiddish word, and came from the Yiddish community in Amsterdam. They would refer to Amsterdam as Mokum. But it also means,
I think,
place, right?
Or home? My town.
My town, right.
Jerusalem was their second home for the Jewish people.
Ah, right. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's what I heard.
I think that's a very valid explanation. My town. My town.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then Pokemon, yeah, exactly. That's it, basically. We changed the name Hotel Marnix to Hotel Mokum. And unfortunately, it only lasted for 6 weeks. We got evicted because of fire safety. It's 5 floors, and then all the floors, apart from the ground floor, are made of wood, like a lot of buildings in Amsterdam. But this building was really unsafe, apparently. Yeah, we didn't get the chance to negotiate or to talk about it. We really made sure, we didn't do events on the top floors. We were aware that it's like wood and that you shouldn't have a lot of smoking people or partying people. We were also not sure how much the floors could take, but our events were on the ground floor. And then we got this speed eviction, basically. So we had to, we got evicted within 3 days. Yeah, it's sad because it's just like over in 3 days. But as long as it lasted, it was a great place. I think it was really, for me, it was great because it was just a place where you would go to and meet friends or friend of friends or people that become friends. When we did events, it was constantly completely packed. What did we do? We did like political cafes where we would have debates on the ground floor. We did a big exhibition. That was the first time we opened the floors for an exhibition. It was really handy because before everyone helped cleaning up and then there was the exhibition. Yeah, and I think what really inspired me of these things is that the boundaries are not really set yet. So if you do an exhibition, what I'm used to is there's a certain scene exhibiting or certain people, there are certain expectations because the place is already established. And here we just did an open call and we said, if you have some work, you can just bring it. And the great thing was that it was a combination of really established artists, emerging artists, and people that like to make drawings. And that felt really refreshing for me in Amsterdam. I don't think that's happening so much, not on such a scale.
I think that actually touches the heart of what I want to talk about, is the role of culture in Amsterdam and how the places that you are involved with basically form what I always see, like this hummus layer. And I think no city can flourish without a hummus layer. It feeds the cultural scene. But maybe we should talk a little bit then about what does culture, independent culture mean, or what does counterculture mean? How do you fill it in? Maybe short.
For us, it's basically there's no boundaries or hierarchy between the artist and the audience. So this is really like, you keep the prices low, so most people can afford and come. And also, everything is done by volunteers. It makes it more like part of the community. And when I got there like 20 years ago, there were still like squats in the area. So the people that living in the squats also use the oki for repetition or info events. And that's kind of gone. There's not much happening in the area anymore. So it's more like a venue nowadays with a very international program. So we once got a review, like said, Okiki's voice to the, all the dissident voices of the four corners of the globe. So it's really like international. And for me, the most important thing is the combination of the info, the entertainment, and the music that gives it a little. And then, keep it open as much as possible.
And how do you finance the groups if they come from Indonesia?
If they come, then what comes in at the door goes out to the artist, and because we keep...
So the contract is that?
That's basically it. And then, we do it for such a long time. I mean, I also organize sometimes like a dance event. There's less money involved, but a lot of money comes in from the bar or whatever. With that, you always like shift it a little bit, move. So in the end, we want to break even, not more. So at the end of the year, you break even, and then you hope that everybody got a piece of the pie, and enough to make things happening. And
did it happen that it not break even? What do you do then?
Not as long as I'm there.
Okay.
But also, since 10 years, we do have structural funding from AFCA. And,
which is the Amsterdam Fund for the Arts.
Yeah, yeah. It's now the second time for 4 years, so we have it now.
So it's like a structural...
Yeah, a four-year, and it kind of came because the Stadsdelen don't exist anymore. And,
which is
and
the neighborhood.
The neighborhood, and we also have a kids program 2-3 days a week that's really done by... For the 0 to 12 year old kids, 2-3 days a week, workshops or party or combination of things.
What workshop? Music also.
We also do paint, action paint.
Yeah.
Throwing fennel. But it can also be today. We're gonna work with herbs and food you find in the Vondel Park and just stuff with kids. Really basic. But of course, we go to the schools, so there's also a lot of private schools opvang. Less, but it's kids from the school, from the area.
From that area.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is actually because it's based in the south part of Amsterdam. It's, it's neighboring but, to Vondelpark, which is one of the most expensive areas in Amsterdam.
Yeah, but the Schinkelbuurt is like, we are more connected to the Schinkelbuurt, the new west.
Yes.
But of course also that is not what it used to be. Like 20 years ago, the street, the eerste Schinkelstraat, tweede Schinkelstraat, derde Schinkelstraat, were all garage boxen. Was a lot of working class people. Now it's all gone. And also the old folks, our neighbors that lived there since the 20s to 30s, they all moved out to New West. It's more, yeah, their houses are very, very valuable and they can buy twice as big or something quiet outside. So the whole area is definitely on the, but it's also, yeah.
Has it meant a shift in both your audience, but also how the neighborhood responds to your location?
After the pandemic, now we're in a fight with all the neighbors. It's just reopening, and we have a big, big problem now. And, yeah,
that's, and you've been open for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly.
And already everybody's complaining.
Yeah. What the fuck are you doing in a neighborhood where people live? You cannot make noise after midnight. So now we are part of this, what we just said, right to live in a city, and people are like...
Yeah. And are these neighbors, the neighbors that already live there? How long do you name it? Right,
yeah.
Because that,
but now they bought the house.
They own it.
Before
that,
they were renters, or they moved in, and now they own the place. So they bought it from the original people that moved out. And now they want everything to be quiet or accepted within blah, blah, blah. And they say that music has to be something for the Bijlmer or Slaughter Plus.
Right.
You cannot have bands playing in an area where people... And some of these people are like musicians or artists themselves. It's just really, really fucking weird.
Yeah.
That's something that we have
to face. You see that as well, the shift from, you know, art and contemporary art, performing arts, visual arts, moving from the city center out to other places. And is that a problem?
Well, what I see is already for 20 years that there's no influx of young artists and musicians and dancers, whatever, because you cannot find a house. So, and I remember like 20 or 30 years ago, I talked to the town government about this problem, and then still the idea was, well, then you go to Rotterdam. You know, that was a long time for all the people.
Yeah, yeah.
And say, well, if you don't like it here, you go to Rotterdam. For people who don't know, that's the
kind also of still a lot of young musicians moved to Rotterdam past 5-6 years.
Yeah, yeah. No, everybody from the Rietveld also, they all moved to Rotterdam, The Hague.
Yeah.
You know, all the young artists who come and work in my studio, they come from Arnhem or Rotterdam. Never from Amsterdam. It's really difficult to find anybody in Amsterdam, a young artist who can help me out in the studio. But we, kind of like when we squatted the Delving Monks and I don't know how, but like all the people, we knew somehow that the whole city center was going to change. So that's why we really put a lot of energy in buying the building And we didn't want to buy it for ourselves because we always said we want to buy it for the city. So it was never involved something from the ego, like artists, oh, we want to become famous, we have this space, you know, we want to make a famous gallery. That was never the case. And that was really a good base. So, and also the structure, like how we have the directors and organized everything, is always based on the ideas of the artists, never on the ideas of the curators or directors. So the artists are always first. And of course now we are in a difficult position because also the Amsterdam Fund for the Arts, the AFCA, didn't give us the subsidy the last time, 2 years ago, because they said you're only there for the tourists and you're not involved in US or whatever. So it's the opposite.
They actually want you to be involved in the areas around it. We're surrounding Amsterdam.
Yeah, and
instead
also,
of being involved in the city center.
But that is because the people who are in those commissions, you know, they never spend the whole night in the Warmstadt or in our space, so they don't know what's going on. Mm. And whereas we see it as very important, you know, to have young tourists coming into our space, because for them it's a complete surprise then to find in. For them, you know, expensive city, close to the Dam Square, a few minutes, such an enormous alternative space. And I do have the experience also that, you know, for example, people come in and they are like really surprised. You can talk to them. I once talked to a truck driver from England, you know, who just by accident strolled in and then was surprised, bought a poster. And so it's really important, it's not like we are only focused on what a lot of these spaces, like in the East or the Apple, they're mainly for, although of course for the AFCA they say, well, we also do education, we do this for the neighborhood, but mainly they're just focused on, their website and the Instagram on in the art world, you know, it's very exclusive. All the talks and all the readings and everything they do is very, which is good, you know, because that's part of the art world, which also is going to develop into a new direction, because the world has to change, is changing. Yeah. But we are mostly focused on the neighborhood, you know, because still a lot of artists live there.
I wanted to say, but still even for young artists, like for instance now, it's March and we actually had an open month where there was an open call and people could just submit 200 artists and collectors.
250.
Yeah, submitted plans to host a night or maybe to put up their own show.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to see how many people or how it gave space to so many young artists still, you know.
Not only young artists.
No, and older artists. Well, I was actually part of it. I'm old. But the nice thing, I think, is about, you said, you know, you're doing it for the neighborhood and then you have this occasional...
and the neighborhood is also the tourist.
Is exactly. Well, and it's a combination of both. And it's still like a place in the city center. And I think that is the most important thing, where you can go. And it's actually the only place where you could meet everybody.
Yeah.
Where you meet the accidental tourist that walks in.
Yeah.
Where you meet the, you know, the fine art retreat student with someone from the neighborhood living there. Whereas, like, if you... look at exactly as you said, it's something like the Apple, which is a beautiful place, but it is very much catered toward one small scene. I think, Wouter, is that also a reason why you think that Malcolm, Hotel Malcolm or Malcolm Kracht, as they're now called, are focusing on in and around the city center? Because actually recently, the organization behind it squatted a new building on the Kinkerstraat, which is also quite central in Amsterdam.
Yeah, definitely. I think, I think most people consider that center as well, right? Or most friends I know.
That is within the vicinity of, well, which is inside the ring, the highway surrounding Amsterdam. We still
right, yeah, yeah, exactly,
center.
yeah. This was like a merge of Hotel Malcolm, Kinder van Malcolm, which is another group of squatters and some other individuals, and it's a former laundromat in the Kinkerstraat. The Kinkerstraat used to be a working class neighborhood. And then you have the Jan Pieter Heijstraat on the corner, which is one of the most heavily gentrified areas in Amsterdam, I think, at the moment. Yeah, with a huge other Patriots is also squatted now. Yeah. But this place, I think we always try to do something in the center because, yeah, we want to reclaim Pak Mokum terug. It's like the idea to reclaim the center. So Hotel Mokum was in the Marnixstad, and we wanted to have cheap culture. It's like the area with the Leidse Plein and all the theaters, which is, let's say, yeah, expensive culture, not accessible for everyone. And we wanted to counter this with, like, yeah, free culture mostly. Our events were free on donation. I think what's really interesting, there's this new current that people have certain ideas with streets and who should be there, who should live there. So I know it's in the Marnixstad that most people that are in their 50s, 60s understand what squatting is. They knew it from back in the day, and you don't need to explain what you're doing. It was mostly people my age in their 30s that would say, like, yeah, but this, I don't disagree with squatting, but not in this street because this is an expensive street. And it's really like this idea, like, same with the municipality saying, like, if you want to have alternative culture, fine, we all like that, but do it here.
Yeah.
And then it's seen as this attraction, like, oh yeah, maybe this person, if he feels a bit funky.
Anymore, no.
What do you mean?
No, it's not. That's not the point of view of the city.
Of the city.
No, because like for the W139 and the whole block, you know, we once squatted.
Yeah.
All the ground floor, working spaces are now studios, because when we renovated it, we were all involved in the renovation, so we had a big say in how it was renovated. And now, we convinced the municipality that they have to support the W139 because we don't have enough money. So they spend a little money on the W139. But next to that, I made a plan. I told the city, you have to buy all the studios back because they're from the corporation now. And the corporation is just raising the rents. You know, they were like 300 euros a month.
Yeah.
And now they're pushing everybody out, and it's going to 1,700 a month. So it's still in one hand now, and they agreed, you know. So the city says...
City agreed.
Did it Freyante or the...
No, the studios downstairs
in
the whole block, so it's about 30 studios.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, I wrote a letter to Van Carlsen. I said, well, now is the time to buy it back because you want to bring Amsterdam back to the Amsterdam people. And so they hired a really fancy real estate guy, a young guy, a nice guy. First time I met him, I had a coffee with him, and then after, I think 10 minutes, he said, well, you have to know, I'm really a liberal guy, you know, I'm right wing. He saw me as a kind of like anarchist or whatever. So it's really, but he's good, you know, on that level, because he does the talking with the corporation. And the corporation is now agreeing to kind of like investigate the idea. We are going to buy all the studios back. And that is supported by the NVZDAC, you know. There's a really good woman there, Dani Albers. And so she's pushing it silently into the town government, you know. Because I say, well, now, you know, it's still in one hand. And the guy, the corporation, one day is going to sell it to whatever, BlackRock or, you know, anybody who wants it. And it's really a diamond in the city, you know, to own like 35 of these ground floor spaces where you can have shops or whatever. And so they're really putting...
So is there then a shift politically? Because we actually, Amsterdam has and has always had a more of a leftist municipality, always leaning more towards the left or middle of the left. But then again, we've seen them kind of giving away grounds to, you know, exactly speculants like Blackstone, you know, selling off properties. So do you think that they are kind of, maybe they're aware of what their role was in this gentrification of the city and thus kind of pushing out?
No, but there's more involved. I know from, it's also that the police is looking into what kind of drug money is involved in buying all this, you know. So that it's, they say the most important idea is that the social structure of the whole city center is going away, is falling apart, and that's very dangerous, the police says. So it's not like the politicians say.
It's more informed by, lawmakers than by...
Well, it's also the lawmakers, and also it's because I proposed to them, I said, it's a once-in-a-lifetime chance, you know, now it's still in your hands to negotiate and put pressure on the corporation. And they see, because we have the W139, and they see, okay, from there, if they buy it or we, you know, support buying it, then from there, you know, you can kind of like expand the social structure into the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And then, because like the Newmarkt still has a kind of social structure, but our around the Dam Square and, well, maybe in the NSA Almersblad, you know, the other side behind the palace, but our side, and there's still a lot of, you know, you have the Bulldog, that's also, of course, a criminal organization behind the Bulldog.
Bulldog is a very famous coffee shop for mainly tourists.
Yeah, they have a hotel, a cafe, and the whole structure, social structure, is very unbalanced there.
Can I then put something on the table and also see how it aligns with the ideology of squatting? If you become an owner of a building, because that is what you're investing at, basically to protect this autonomous identity, but you are becoming an owner, will that change dynamics? Because I think ownership brings different responsibilities, maybe even shifts in ideas. I was wondering what you think about that.
What I can see in kind of my field with the venues, like the concept places, I've seen differences when other places that started from squatting became good plots and then later got financed. It's changed a little bit of the structure of the organization and the program, more based on making more money to make pay for everything and less about the community and less about the free entrance or the interaction between everybody. I've seen that a little bit change. And on the other hand, it also kind of varies, of course, how open are you? How many days a night? How many days a week? What is really, in the end, your goal with the place? And then there's not much new for the past 20 years that really made a difference or stand out again. And I've seen a lot of places, got evicted and gone. And that's more what happened than places got bought and changed the scenery or something.
Well, I think the biggest problem is the funding. You know, the AFK and the Mondrian are the most important fundings for creative places. And Broedplaats on Leiden is also a disaster for Amsterdam. Yeah. It's really bad.
I think with this Broedplaats beleid is like right now the municipality is using the Expeditie Vrijplaats, which is an answer, I think, to this Broedplaats. And so the Broedplaat, translated breeding ground, is already, the word already says a lot, right? Like you can stay somewhere for a little while, breed on it, and then if you don't breeding, rental price probably are higher, and then as an artist you have to leave and go further into the periphery. And this was really it's not some phenomenon, it's really it's policy by the city, and the city now is realizing that they, and by doing that kind of makes the center quite boring, the inner center, and now they have this new thing which is called Expeditie Vrijplaats, which is about a few places in the center. So Steenhoofd is one, which is an area at the at the A.
Right behind Central Station.
Yeah, exactly. And then on the surface, it sounds like, oh yeah, you can do your thing here. We also like Vrijplaats, so it's important for the fabric of the city. But then as soon as if you really start to ask, like, okay, so we can live there? It's like, no, not in the center. Like, there's no houses in the center. Then you have to go to the periphery. Oh, okay. But at least can we, like, work there 24/7? Like, oh no, sorry, also not. And then you realize that you're so apart from each other, because it's really hard work, you know, like it's first you have to clean a place, then there's like all this programming, and it's really magical, I think, because it's really this power of the collective. But with Ozamokum, it also made me realize that we don't really need the city. We need sometimes some money is nice, but there's other, money that also you can get it with donation or with other stuff. Most of the time, self-organizing, the interesting stuff happens when you organize yourself. Yeah. And the moment there is something like AFK involved, you already have to promise something, which you already structure it in a different way.
The AFK and all these funding is, you know, and that's mostly, I think, because there's curators in those commissions. Not that I have anything against curators, but that's a different breed. But as a, you know, free space, whatever, you go from the ideas from the musicians, you know, and from the artists. Those are the ideas, not from who's organizing, you know.
And it's based on what we did for 20 years and not what we want to do the next
year. Yeah, but that will change.
Yeah, sure. But that's a must. Yeah, that's for us a way to communicate them. But we want to keep it volunteer run, and we want to keep kind of what we're doing, what we were doing.
Yeah.
And then slowly, maybe we will go back again to our own fully independent.
Yeah, that's better.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
The moment the theater or the venue part of the AFK, the people I haven't seen them for years, and they're all sick and tired or left. It's a bit weird to just.
Yeah. But the most problem is that, you know, those commission people, they are never looking, you know, at the whole of the city and think like, okay, this is a good space. And maybe, you know, we don't have that much money. Communicate with the space, because you cannot communicate with the commission. They just look at it and they say yes or no. And then if they would communicate, you know, you could say like, okay, then we give hockey like this much, and then
new initiatives, they come and go. It's also kind of what they do. It's
That's what I found difficult now sometimes with the current climate, is that the new initiatives, like you work really hard, and then there's like no trust at all, you know? And I'm really like, well, if you want to have like these free spaces, like nice plans with the exposition, we already started, you know, we already squatted this place, let's talk. But then there's no conversation, and it's really, you're really hitting a wall. And then this eviction was also just insane, where I was like, well, let's say this crane and 16 police cars or more. And I get, it was really this image of the 80s, I guess. And it was really like, hey, we're just a bunch of artists. We're not on the rooftop with Molotov cocktails. But it's, you constantly have to, the stigma is just really strong. And it's really, you really don't have the feeling that you're wanted in the city. It's just, like you're unwanted and not part of the linear progress that Amsterdam seems to, liberal linear progress that Amsterdam seems to go to. But then again, I think it's really an action, like squatting. It's just also an answer to this. It's not, we don't say like, hey, city of Amsterdam, we really like you. It's just the right to the city. We live here and we want space, so we claim it. And
One of the things also is like, you know, I found the part for the WSM, we found out, you know, the value for the city, because we along came a study guy who worked in Africa and South America for microfinance. So he pointed out, you know, on the internet for like VN or whatever, big institution, how they value a cultural space in a city. So, and from there we started, you know, thinking like, and he said, money is not the problem, you know, you have to really assess the value of a space, and then not to, the lower part of the politics, but you really have to go to the mayor and, you know, because they understand that the people are working just day to day, you know, on the AFK, whatever, you know, they're only concerned about their job and their budget. But if you go up, but it's really difficult to get, you know, an entrance. So that's, for example, with the new plans I'm working on, this Jannie Albers, you know, from the MVC Dijk, she has an entrance everywhere. So once she was convinced about my idea really quickly, because she saw the possibilities, then you have this entrance. But as long as you have to talk to the police or the firebreak, whatever, you know, you're not going anywhere. So that's also why ownership, you know, in some way is the only way nowadays to solve this problem. And, you know, yeah, because if you squat, you know, that's from the beginning, like 40 years ago, when we squatted all the buildings, there was an older guy, one of the older guys, he was a philosopher. Mm-hmm. He said, well, once you squat it and you don't do anything with it, you know, then it's useless. So, because when the police come, or when Van Kalstema comes and looks into it, you know, the mayor, and they don't see anything happening there. I mean, there was, of course, in that time, there was like everything was empty. Nowadays, not. But so you have to do something with the building, and then you have to kind of like communicate that to the, you know, the upper part if you really want something.
Yeah, yeah, but I think that's also the what's happening, right? Like it's that's also I feel the stigma that the place is squalid and then the squatters were just there smoking inside or something.
Yeah,
it's a super active scene always, and I think with Hotel Mokum and now the Vasileta, we also really try to actively. Use media, social media.
Did you try to buy Hotel Mokum?
No, we didn't. Got like six chances.
Yeah,
we
six
got,
weeks.
Yeah, we had 6 weeks and we got fixed in 3 days.
Yeah.
But what we do is we really go to the media and or create, use our own social media to address like, hey, there's a housing crisis, first of all, like the worst since the Second World War. Squatting is illegal, but so is leegstand since the 80s. Like it's just an afweging, something you have to decide on, right? And I think we are really trying actively to break the stigma and I really like the slogan, like kraken gaat door, squatting continues. Like even if you get evicted, you just continue. And it's also really true, squatting continues. So far, it's sometimes it's a little bit less, sometimes more, but it will remain, I think. And maybe like the Klaagverbod will like be a little bit more softened in Amsterdam. That will already be a big. And yet, it's political action, of course. I think art space has come by, but the first step is just political action and trying to find housing in a housing crisis.
And actually, we recently had municipal elections, and there were a few parties, three, I think, in total, who've actually took something on squatting into their program, their party programs, where they would say, we need this space in the city. But I was wondering, though, so we're talking about the city center, you know, like, which is enclosed by this highway, the Ring. And I'm wondering if we are moved, you know, as a artistic community, if we are moved to a place like the north or the new west or even southeast, is that such a bad thing that the city... Maybe city centers are shifting. Maybe our right to the city actually lies in all these new to be developed places.
Well, you know, you have to see from two sides. First, you know, as an artist, you know, you want to make art and you want to show it. And where? In the beginning, it doesn't matter. You know, if it's in Amstelveen or whatever, as long as your friends from the beginning and then later on more people can come and visit, it's okay. And then, but now, you know, the city, it's, you know, has a problem. So now the AFK and all these funding are going to say, well, you have to do something for the city. So, you know, they double play on us. First, they want you to make art. And then they say, well, whatever, you know, go to the bell or whatever. And now they say, oh, you make art, you also have to do something for the city. And, but it's kind of like two problems which they try, the artist or whatever, to solve also for them. But it's their mistake, you know, in the time of the, you know, when the politics were like made by the liberals, by the VVD and the PvdA in the city, you know, they made the I Amsterdam, and that was the beginning of the end.
Yeah. Maybe to come back to the center of Amsterdam, what I really like about Amsterdam compared to other bigger cities is that there's, like, you can really in one night, live in East and then go to West to a party and then have some cocktails in the pipe or whatever, go to the center and then to a rave in North. It's really small enough and you can cycle everywhere. So the center is already in several districts, I would say, But then it should just, yeah, the center with this I Amsterdam became a place that you would almost avoid sometimes with your bike. You wouldn't cycle past the Dom. And I think that's really, yeah, that's just not what the city should be. Like the Dom, yeah, first of all, Palais should just be a city hall again, because that's the center. It's for, it's ours. It's from people from Amsterdam, right? And I think this feeling is sometimes gone, or this feeling that the city is ours. Like, yeah, this property is literally from everyone who pays tax here or lives here.
Yeah, a lot of
so times. We have to protect this, or to, yeah, to remember.
My friends a lot of times pity me that I live in the tourist area.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's,
they say,
yeah.
Oh, poor you.
And there's nothing wrong with tourists, of course, but I think there's this, I forgot the author, but there's this triangle thing, right, that you need people to, you know, to have a vital neighborhood, you have to, people to live there, work there, and visitors. And as long as you have this flow, then you have an interesting, vibrant city. And if not, then you get like the side house, only people work there, the center, only visitors, you know. And yeah, I think it's really important to foster this dynamic in the city.
I wanted to share some thoughts because of all the conversations we've been having with different people. So, for example, I have the thing when the We Are Here collective came and they explained their experience of squatting, that in the last 10 years, the We Are Here movement, they have been the most active squatters in the city. And their actions were not about being able to make art, but they were actually about being able to exist. So I also want to bring the first rent strikes in the 20s that Nehrit Bitsma was, she was a squatter in the 80s and 90s in Amsterdam, and she's a filmmaker. And she did a whole project about the first rent strikes that took place in the 20s and 30s in Amsterdam and in different cities in the Netherlands. Also, actually, the first squatters that started after the Second World War in London were related to the Communist Party, and they were not wearing any anarchist clothes. They were actually just dressed as normal citizens. So actually, squatting, it's a political tool, and it is a political action that is meant to go against actually the regime of property that is articulating the city. And what I've been hearing from you is that you were talking how much actually your neighborhoods were much more working class when you, or even criminal or very dangerous places. So how basically your activities or your initiatives really managed from a grassroots activity to bring life and to bring real city in those areas, and how can that be kept like that instead of becoming a gentrification instrument? Mm-hmm. So we should restore the city, not gentrify it. And it's about maintenance. It's not about the speculation. It's so difficult to with our tools, because artists, we are the professionals of communication. So if you change the rhetorics, if you create new language, you basically are able to inspire whole areas and to make those areas more livable and more cheerful. And but how can we manage that? What we do is not instrumentalized by capitalists to speculate with our city and to steal it back. Because what's happening now, like, yeah, you should move outside. Why you should go to New West? You should go to New West because they want to speculate on the value of New West. And they are already, you know, we are already done with you in the pipe. You should get the hell out. And the only way to stay there is to buy your building. And then you start thinking, like a lot of how you are talking at, it's you are thinking as an owner, as a you know, as a capitalist, actually. Yeah. You're not thinking it's a squatter. No. I mean, I'm not, it's just to understand.
No, I know how I'm thinking.
Yeah. so how, and then also the Art Council, is playing with us all the time with this thing of every 4 years granting or every 2 years granting. Basically, we're just instruments of the municipality to gentrify or to give some life here and there whenever they want. And then how can we really claim our right to the city in the sense of like, hey, this area, which, for example, it was a project for working class families in a certain moment, has to remain like that because it creates the social balance in the city steady. A city is not only the buildings, it's also the people that live there. So if all working class of all lower income families, they have to leave the city, Amsterdam is never going to be Amsterdam again, because Amsterdam is not actually a only bourgeois wealthy city. It's been a city of multicultural, different layers of society living together, because in the 70s and 80s, there was really from the municipality a plan to keep social balance intact by really, you know, deciding who would live in certain areas. All different kinds of income should live together. That's the city we want. We don't want a city where only rich people live in the center and all the rest, they have to leave. So I think it's, well, maybe it's a question for you all. Do you think that it is a cultural change that we need to bring forward to make the politicians understand better their city? I have the feeling maybe they don't understand, or maybe they understand too well that, and then we are not on the picture. Are we on the picture or not, you know? And
I'm in the center, yeah. I'm sitting in the center. Well, I think there are some politicians are realizing what's happening, but yeah, I think the power of the corporations, you know, because the liberal rules that they can sell off the social housing, you know, came from the government, and they're, you know, slowing it down now. That I think in the next period they cannot sell it anymore. I read in the newspaper, for example, that like I think 20% of every city should have social housing, and they don't have it. Most cities don't have it anymore. Well, it is what, like, you know, Jules, what you said, and I also see it in my neighborhood, in my house already, because I have a social house. You know, I rent social. But in my building, the top floor, they kicked it out of the social rent. So somebody pays 1,200 euros there, where I pay, I think, 650 or something. So first time he was there, he was giving a party, I was calling him at night and say, hey, you know, it's really noisy, and I'm sleeping next under you, you know, that's my bedroom. And then he said, well, you know, listen, I'm paying 1,200, what are you paying? Yeah, and he came from the south of Amsterdam, so he came from a rich family. But so that was the first time, you know, that something like that happened. And then you feel the pressure, like, oh, the corporation wants this all to go out, and, you know, although it's forbidden, they will raise the rent. So we started to write letters. You know, the next time somebody left our building, we said it should stay social housing. And then they did. First time 40 years ago when we squatted, you know, there were some old people living. And their roofs were leaking, you know. They had wet curtains, you know. It was really bad to live there. So as squatters, we said to them, you should stop paying rent. They first should, you know, repair your house. And they were afraid. They said, no, no, no. Because, you know, then they will kick me out. And we said, no, we have a lawyer and they're not going to kick you out. So, you know, the social abilities of people to really stand up for their rights is very poor, mostly, unless you have a good lawyer who comes to the meetings and says, like, you know, really in face, like, no, you know, going to put all the rent on a different bank account, you know, and keep it there. And then first we tell them to repair or to do something. And that's what we did in the beginning. And that's how we got a few older people who still live there, you know, behind us. And they really saw, like, oh, this is going to work.
So did you do a rent strike? You organized rent strike?
Yeah. Well, and also when we had all contracts, you know, all the squatters had a contract, we would we said, okay, we're going to pay, everybody's going to pay 100 guilders for whatever space you had, it didn't matter. So it was like 60, 70 buildings who would pay that. It would all go into making all the different houses fireproof, leak-free, have good electricity. So all the rent would go into the, our own block and not go anywhere else. So that's how we negotiated that with a good lawyer. And also that you could, if you wanted, you could buy after, but nobody did that, I think, except for one guy.
I think the corporation, the Winnepret, where we spoke, you're a part of, we come together at least once a month with all the different laden, everybody has a contract. And most people are still involved with the We Are Here groups, with the buitenparlementaire actiegroepen, and we host a couple of anarchist groups, and the Occhi volunteers also come from Squatter Movement or whatever. And we, during the pandemic, we were like a meeting hall, because most people were not having spaces where they could come together with large groups and social distance. So we were still kind of part of an infrastructure of direct action groups and local, but as same time at the corporation, everybody kind of has its own identity and theater or concerts. So it's a bit of two parts, I think, at the moment. We're still part of some sort of infrastructure of independent artists that want to travel the world, see different people and not going to hotels and can allow to enter the center. But that's kind of the part of the infrastructure that Occhi also has. It's international, and for our city, I don't know if that's what the city wants or not. If we can go to outside, as long as the social public transport comes there and people can go to a concert and get back home.
What does the city need?
The city? Yeah, I think less money, more people, just direct, meer self werkzaamheid.
More do it yourself. With that.
Yeah. The that's good. And we can live and work in a community way in a monumental building without all the benefits. Of course, we do have a little subsidy, and we have ways to make things happen, and that's our dreams, and things come together there, and we don't need a curator, or we don't need the city to tell us what to do, and that's changed.
But like, I want to say, like what you say, you know, how can you organize that again? You know, what I see is like, you know, like in Occhi, most important things, you do things, you know, and you can see them, you can hear them. And for like in my block, my neighborhood, you know, because there's a lot of new people on the canals, all the houses were sold. So that's like owners. We're trying to have new meetings, you know, like, because before we would have meetings like every 2 months with all the squatters and all the people who live there, like more than 100 people. You can imagine how these were, these meetings. You know.
Yeah.
So, but now you can see like most of these people, like they're all working, you know, have jobs 5 days a week, men and women, children. So for them, it's really totally out of any idea that they, in the evening, they don't go to the sport group, they go to a meeting, and then somehow you ask them, can you help us print, or can you finance to print some posters, or can you write something? Mm-hmm. Of course, I mean, we still have the artists, but I can see for the other people that it takes them for mostly a year or 2 years to really enter in this new space where they think like, oh, we have neighbors, hey, what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's like half a year, and then another half year, maybe you have a beer together. So Because most people are now so, not now, but for a long time already, focused, you know, on paying the high rent, making enough money. So it's really difficult. When I started, I was on Social Security for a while. You know, I could, you know, have my own time if I wanted to work on the neighborhood for like